The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Hello and welcome to the happy hour here on Guardian Radio 96.9. This is Deandra Cartwright, and I am delighted to have you join us this afternoon. You've chosen to come here to replenish your cup with optimism and positivity while we hear from the folks in our community that are making a positive impact. Today, I think we're going to find this show to be very, very interesting. With that being said, before we get into it, I just want to remind you that we will be streaming on guardiantalkradio.com. You can also listen on TV, Cable Bahamas Channel 969 or BTC Flow Channel 612. You can also download the Guardian Radio app for your Apple or Android smart devices and listen to our audio feed or watch us on our video feed right there on the Guardian Radio app. You can also text us on the Guardian Radio text line, 422-4796. You can call in 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 326-4259 or toll free at 300-5720. If you ever missed a show or want to go back and listen again, log on to theguardiantalkradio.com, click on podcast, search for the show's name, The Happy Hour, and look for the date you want. It'll be up before the end of the next working day. With that being said, ladies and gentlemen, you know, we have to give that at the beginning of every show, just so you know how to catch us. Joining us today, we're talking about something that's very near and dear to quite a few persons in this country. We're talking about pets. We are talking about our animals. We're talking about how we treat those who cannot speak up for themselves. And I know a lot's going on in the country. So we just wanted to, you know, bring it back to those that bring us joy. And how do we treat them? Joining us today, we have Mr. Devlin Stubbs, who has a Bachelor's of Arts degree. He's a pet trainer and is certified in this area, having 25 years of professional dog training experience. He's developed a passion for dog care and training from a very young age. He holds a Pet Trainer 1 certification, as well as a Bachelor's of Arts in Philosophy, as well as a Ministry of Youth Leader and Counselor certification. Additionally, Mr. Stubbs played a key role in coordinating Nature's Summer Camp and School Club, as well as Potcake Assisted Therapy, both of which are now managed by Pat's Nature Garden, Inc. Also joining Mr. Stubbs, and I'm sure a lot of persons would know, those of us who graduated from the College of the Bahamas, now University of the Bahamas, would know the greatness that is Professor Bridget Hogg. Professor Hogg is a veteran Bahamian educator, having served at R.M. Bailey, the College of the Bahamas, now University of the Bahamas, for a total of 36 years. She loves being in the education field, working to serve her students, and through them do her part in contributing to the development of our nation. She has an international baccalaureate from the United World College of the Atlantic, teaching certificate from the Joint Board of Teacher Education, UWI, a Bachelor of Science degree with honors, and a master's degree through the Tropical Metabolism Research Unit of the University of the West Indies. Her professional roles have included academic advisor, researcher, department head, chairperson, academic senator, and trustee. Professor Hogg serves as a mentor to youth in science locally and to early career women internationally through the Commonwealth of Learning, Commonwealth Wise Women Project. These are ways that she gives back to help build a brighter future. Through her many roles, one of those she will be exploring today would be dog therapy. Now, with that being said, my lady, my sir, I have read thoroughly your background. I'm sure those who are tuning in know now that we are talking with the experts. So with that, please, let's start the conversation. Why should we treat our animals with care and dignity? Mr. Tubbs, I'll ask you first.
Well, number one, because they are part of the family, and all creatures under the sun deserve our care, because we're on the planet sharing one large, huge multiplicity of ecosystems, but really just one large ecosystem together. So that alone quantifies that we should care for our animals and our pets.
And what do you think is the state of animal care here in the Bahamas? Now, your background is with dogs, obviously, and I've seen quite a few. I feel like there's an increase in pet ownership, and I'm sure we're going to have the Bahamas Humane Society in the future on the show, as well as Bark. We want to hear from these organizations that are really making a difference for our animals. But perhaps before I get back to that question, Professor Hogg, can you please let our listeners know how are you involved with your background in education? How did you get involved with dog therapy?
Well, my family, from when I was little, we've always had a dog in the family. And so when I had my children, I brought a dog into the family. And our most recent dog, Frappe, we adopted her from the Humane Society, and she was a great ball of energy. She was a shredder. She was a runner. She was a noisemaker, and she really needed some training. And so I sought out Mr. Stubbs, and he worked her through, and she got a good citizenship certificate. And he said to me, she looks very trainable. And so we started working together, and I found it enjoyable, and she found it enjoyable, and it really calmed her down. She's still a bit wild in terms of she's full of energy, but it's directed energy. And after I saw that, I wanted to continue the experience. And so I started going out on the visits with Mr. Stubbs. And so that's how I came to be involved. Me and Frappe, that's my dog. She's a good girl now.
Oh, and you said she got a good citizen certificate. What does that mean?
Well, that means that she can be around people and she's going to behave. She listens to commands. She can be in a setting and be focused. In other words, she has good dog manners.
Good dog manners. That sounds like something we need to be replicating in adulthood sometimes. No, that's fantastic though. I wonder before we dive into just really how that experience has positively impacted you, mentally, emotionally. Therapy is something we don't talk about enough in our country, and then there are many ways to get it in. Sometimes we are giving ourselves therapy through ways that we're not truly acknowledging sometimes. Mr. Stubbs, how did it feel to have someone who engaged you for training purposes, because that is your area of expertise, and have them grow to love what you do and want to learn more about the positive impact of having a pet, such as a dog?
Well, that's what I'm here for. That's what it's all about. And I seek to or we seek to grow the community of therapy dogs and persons that seek advanced training and can just continue training as a lifestyle. Our dogs love it. There's so many different areas of training that you can get into, and each trainer can have their own expertise. So it's very diverse. You could have like fly ball where dogs just run and race toward catching a ball once they hit a box with their paws. You could have like they have frisbee, so much sporting events you have, or you have just a standard obedience where your dog just responds to commands really well, like come and down and stay and retrieve, So there's so much opportunities for training in our life that really can make it a lifestyle, and it's fun. And to be honest with you, our dogs need it because they were bred to have a job. And I think that's the crux of where most people end up having their issues, is because dogs are so cute and cuddly, we often forget that they can't stay in the house 24/7 or 23 hours. They as cute as they are, deep down inside, they were descended from the same line as the gray wolves. So they got a lot inside of them, and they need, I'd say, like 2 to 4 hours a day If a word of exercise, if we could quit our jobs and accomplish that.
No, I think that actually sounds very healthy. But I want you to tell us a bit more about what, how can dogs, how in your experience, how have dogs improved our lives as humans? We've heard therapy, and I'm going to let Dr. Hogg speak a bit more about that. But outside of emotional support, how else have you seen dogs positively impact their humans?
Sure. Well, I'll give you one example. A student at a teacher actually at Stapleton School, actually a number of them, but one in particular comes to mind, mentioned that her daughter would have seizures at a young age, and they didn't, and they didn't plan on training their dog to be able to give them some sort of a signal when the seizures were going to come. But the dog is so sensitive. Dogs can scent, can smell a cancer cell, in your body, essentially. So, I mean, that's science. There's studies that show that's how great their nose is. Like, if we have 100 scent particles we can pick up, they can pick up millions. You know what I mean? That's the difference in our ability and theirs. And so, the dog was able to pick up on when the young lady would a seizure was coming. And essentially, that dog trained itself to be a service dog, but that's really one of the, that's what we're working on, and that's what, and so I've seen it obviously with, like, for example, like I said, with the teacher, and then as simple as I've had persons call me to their homes, because the dog was just, if we didn't get something figured out, this dog is going to throw Grammy over and she's going to break a leg, and as simple as that may sound, if no one's home. And we don't get this dog just with some basic obedience, or at least reorganize the living arrangement so that it's practical, So and then on top of that, the dogs keep Grammy alive, because Grammy has a bond with the dog that she lives for, and so we got to get this figured out because we ain't giving this dog away.
No,
You know what I mean?
I'm gonna get mad.
So is that serious from simple situations like with just Grammy or even life-threatening, or chronic ailments, So yeah, dogs bring joy to our life in those serious ways. But with the therapy dogs, we're in the classroom weekly at Stapleton School, Miss Hogg and I, and the joy that it brings to students. I mean, specifically, we know that it lowers stress levels. So that they're able to and want to receive the lesson more and adjust more able to engage in the classroom in any event. So dogs just bring that level of peace and tranquility and happiness for that. Studies have shown that. So I mean, it's something that we don't have to reinvent the wheel. We just need more of it going on in the Bahamas, and that's actually what I want to highlight. We sometimes. There's so much, yeah, definitely there's a lot of bad stuff going on. But because of my profession, I meet so many people that invest so much. Like Ms. Hogg is a perfect example. Ms. Hogg invests so much energy and time into making sure that Frappe lives a wonderful life. I can't count the amount of people I've met like that. And so I like to, my motto in that sense is find the good, highlight that, and duplicate that. Now we gotta deal with the bad, and that's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying to sweep anything under the rug, but I think, solving the stray dog problem has a lot to do with figuring out what are the metrics that are going to solve this problem. And I guess I'll pause there because you might have a question about stray dogs, or Ms. Hogg may want to chime in too,
Well, I actually want Professor Hogg to tell us more about her experience with therapy dogs, but also impacting the young persons with different abilities and what it means to them. And how has that impacted you, Professor Hogg? Because I would imagine being able to see just how empowered such a young person would be just by virtue of having the dog with them would be. Tell us more about that.
Well, I can give you one example. When we first started going to the Stapleton School, there was this one young girl in particular, she was terrified of dogs. And so we made sure to keep the dog away from her to begin with. And we did the parade of dogs where we just went around the classroom and introduced the dogs to the children. And she was like, "Nope, don't introduce me." And she was very hesitant. And as we continued the visits, we didn't stress or push her forward, but we did what we did. Used the dogs as examples when we talked about things like how to spell DOG. They all got that. What are the colors of the dog? So we used lessons focus on dog behavior, dog knowledge. And I will tell you that by the end of that semester, she was like, "Where's Frappe?" So she was interacting, and that felt so good that someone who was expressive of fear was now expressing a fondness.
That
And
is
so that showed
wonderful.
development.
Now
Part of
that's
it is just understanding, but
yeah.
what I've been finding is that the children are more interested in the same activity, spelling, coloring, writing, when it's focused on a dog. Somehow it doesn't seem to be work for them.
I like that because I believe, learning within itself can be a bit difficult for some of our children. And if we have different abilities, then it may get a little bit more difficult. And so the fact that dog therapy being introduced to the classroom to help these students to be better positioned to learn, that is amazing work that you all are doing, really. And I'm happy that we're sharing that with our listening audience. That this is happening right here in our Bahamas, right here on this island. Now, Mr. Stubbs, I know you had mentioned therapy dogs and how the example that you used where the dog wasn't formally engaged for that purpose, but do we actually have that in our country? Do we have a therapy dog program, like a standardized therapy dog program?
Well, yes. Poitkay assisted therapy, which is spearheaded by Miss Hogg, Professor Hogg, and myself, is a formalized therapy dog program where the requirements for our dogs are to have the good citizen certification as well as public access training. And once dog, and that's pretty much, if you want to break that down, it's just pretty much a well-trained obedience dog that's also sociable, and we can trust them in public around from as small as a baby to an older person. They can deal with noises and sounds, and then they can still perform their obedience requirements in those different environments. And so, I mean, that's just a general summary of it. But so yeah, so our program, Poitkay Assisted Therapy, we're at Stapleton School on Tuesdays, and we're really seeking to grow the program. So we're interested in having persons come and bring their dogs and meet up and get involved in the program along with us. And also we seek to venture into other areas, other schools, other institutions. I know the Bahamas doesn't have a lot of like automatic allowances like hospitals and clinics, but it's something that I think that we can grow towards, because it's a valuable asset to involve. Like animal assisted therapy stretches even beyond dogs, but nonetheless, I mean, my expertise is dogs, and so it's proven that the benefits of dogs and other animals in environments where persons may be at risk or in need is the proof is there that it's helped, very helpful.
No, that's incredible. Just for our listening audience, because everybody who would listen to Morning Blood on Monday mornings, you all know that I love data, I like research. So I'm just trying to pull up a few things as we learn from Mr. Stubbs and Dr. Hogg. Animal assisted therapy, according to Psychology Today, is the therapeutic intervention that incorporates animals such as horses, dogs, cats, and birds into the treatment plan. So the client, therapist, and animal work together and therapeutic activities that are outlined in a treatment plan with clear goals for change, measurable objectives, and the expectation of identifiable progress toward the treatment goals. The therapy can take many forms based on the patient, the animal, and the goals for treatment. Animal-assisted therapy is used to enhance and complement the benefits of traditional therapy. It's a useful intervention for some individuals or groups. It can help with a variety of experience and conditions, including, and this list, I really think we need to do more of this because a lot of Bahamians are faced with these things: stress, anxiety, depression, autism, ADHD, addiction, schizophrenia, emotional and behavioral problems, Alzheimer's, and a whole host of medical conditions. This is okay, so we say that we have this inside our schools. You're hoping to grow beyond that. Now, Dr. Hogg, your background formally is in education. Have you seen something like this before? One, and two, do you see what the widespread impact may be or could be if we were to introduce this to more schools?
Well, I haven't seen it outside of what we've been doing, but research has shown that just interacting with pets, with these animals, has a benefit for healthy persons and unhealthy persons in that there's the possibility of forming a bond, an emotional bond, and a physical bond such that blood pressure goes down, stress is released. And there's this bonding that goes on. In fact, universities in the States around this time each year, exam time, they actually will have a furry friend day where they'll bring
Oh.
in cats and dogs and rabbits, and they will have sessions where the animals are there and the students pass by and just sit with them, pet them, and they've found that that actually lowers stress, lowers release. So furry days at schools can actually be useful.
I feel like we had that when I did my graduate studies. They had a day where they brought in the animals for us
Indeed.
to just cuddle, and I'm like, I could just see some of the stress melting away.
It actually reduces the stress chemicals in the body, just that act. So I see there is room for this. Also, I would say that pet companions, once they do bond, they can assist. For example, with Frappe, and with Xena, the other therapy dog, we've been teaching them to fetch. Most people think of fetch as a game, but if you are not very mobile and you need something, your dog can be trained to fetch that specific item based on your command, or even based on the dog's understanding that you need this. So that is one way that help can be provided. There are many others, though.
I am sure there are. Now, my mind, I'm just wondering because Mr. Stubbs, you were talking, you didn't explicitly say it, but I'm wondering if it would help just to have more persons on board to perhaps call for an introduction of some sort of program that would support this growing into schools or something like that in the works before we head to our first break.
Definitely that's something that we have proposed. We have a proposal that we have reached out to external entities, private and government, with the seeking to have the program be more regularized in more schools, because it's, therapy dogs are not just for at-risk youth or persons with special needs. It's there for everybody. Like Miss Hogg mentioned, I think you mentioned like an office setting, but if you didn't, office settings, the corporate world, work-life balance is key. And so definitely, and I did mention that we're open to having persons reach out to us to get involved, with Xena and Frappe's adventures.
No, I think that will be an amazing thing to get more support. And I'm happy to hear that there is an ongoing initiative to bring more attention to these opportunities. Now, we are going to hear more from Mr. Stubbs and Dr. Hogg here on the Happy Hour. This is DeAndre Cartwright, and this is Guardian Radio 96.9. We are learning about therapy dogs, what's going on here in New Providence, and we're going to hear a bit more. I believe there's some Podcake Awards going to be coming up in a couple of months. So stay tuned. Do not leave. We'll be right back. And we're back with the happy hour here on Guardian Radio 96.9. This is Deandra Cartwright. I am joined by Professor Hogg. I was reminded, I like to give people their flowers. So it's Professor Hogg, not Dr. Hogg. I just want to make sure. I don't want anybody to get in trouble. And then we have Mr. Devlin Stubbs, both experts in the area of dogs and dog therapy and all the beautiful things that the joy that dogs bring to our lives. And we're discussing so many different things today, but what we're going to touch on really quickly would be therapy dogs versus service dogs. There's a difference. What's going on with our stray dogs here on New Providence, the Potcake Awards, as well as responsible pet ownership. So we want to jump right in. Therapy versus service dog. What's the difference?
So therapy dogs are not specifically trained to do a certain task, but they're trained to be themselves in an environment to bring about a certain result, such as we talked about. For example, in this study by Maxier and Kochai, from 21 to 2017. They explained that most unequivocal evidence comes from studies on dogs' effects on psychological stress response in challenging situations and on the motivation and the adherence to instructions and the lowering of cortisol levels, as well as increased motivation to learn and participate. So a therapy dog would bring about that sort of a general overall response in the student or the individual, whereas a service dog would be what a minimum would be a post-traumatic stress disorder. So for a person that has perhaps, let's say, they were in a battle or had a traumatic event and they have PTSD, the dog would learn to do deep pressure therapy, which would be being aware that the person is about to have an episode and then laying on them in a position that brings them comfort and keeps them safe. And then you have maybe more challenge. I wouldn't say more challenging, but a different type of service dog that would, like I mentioned earlier, that would be able to identify when a person is going to have a seizure, and maybe even perform a more complicated task like going to get medicine, or finding help, or pressing some sort of an alert button. And so the all of those would be very specific. A guide dog that would be trained enough that it could guide a person through the city, crossing streets and going into stores. So, a therapy dog wouldn't be required to do that, but a therapy dog has its own unique abilities because it can handle large crowds of persons, which could be stressful for some dogs. For a dog that does not socialize from a young age with multiple people, would tend to be shy. And as even as good as I am as a trainer, I have dogs that I have to work on overcoming that myself at times. So it's just something that you have to work on, and that's why training at a young age is super important.
I can imagine. No, I think it's I thank you so much for helping us understand a bit better the differences between the two. Both very helpful, but both serving two different purposes. And I'm hoping to see more of this here at home. Professor Hogg, can you expand just a bit of what Mr. Stubbs has shared with us in terms of your experience with Frappe, and how has Frappe helped you? Because I'm thinking Frappe is more of a therapy dog, not a service dog, or maybe I got it wrong.
Well, she has the potential to be both, beginning, she's been a therapy in that she assists with lowering stress. And on a personal level, just hanging out with her rubbing her down, brushing her down, having a good conversation because she's non-judgmental, so we can talk.
We need more spaces like that.
And then she's a great companion for walks. You know, just take her walking and she goes and on her smelling walk where she pauses and smells. And it's exercise for me, but it's also being in nature. On the other hand, when she's in the school setting, then her behavior is more defined so that she's doing things on command. She's doing a specific task. So, for example, the fetch that I mentioned, that could be turned into a service if, for example, she was working with someone who was not able to collect things. We can tell her specifically fetch. So right now, I'm training her with a pineapple toy that I put some treats in. So if I say frappe, fetch the pineapple, she will go for the pineapple and bring it back to me, knowing that I can then shake it and a treat will come out for her. But specifically, she will go amongst a bunch of different things, but she knows the pineapple. So I tell her, go for the pineapple. She will go for it and bring it back to me, drop it, and then look to me to say, yeah, I did this.
Frappe is such a smart dog. Oh, that's fantastic. And I think, as we can see, the training of a dog is continuous. It seemingly doesn't stop, or it could be evolved. But I want to just steer us along to something else, that I think we've all seen at one point or the other. We all experience, but what are we doing about it, or what could we do? And that's the stray dog. What is a stray dog? I think we may have some, I believe, how do we mention it? Some misunderstandings about what is a stray dog. Let's have that conversation.
Sure. Well, I think we all see dogs in the community on the streets, and the general concept of a stray dog is any dog that we see on the streets. But it could be more specific than that, because it's a little blurry, because a lot of the dogs that we see on the streets have homes and have pseudo homes. Multiple homes and are cared for and oftentimes by the community are not cared for and become a new and seen as a nuisance. And so stray dogs would encompass all of those dogs, even in communities where the dog might even be well cared for, but the dog has the opportunity to leave the yard and come back. For the time that dog is outside of the yard, it what is the difference between that and a dog that doesn't have a home to a child walking on the street that's afraid of the dog? And so, from that from that standpoint, it gets a little bit blurry, and I think that lends to the problem or to how do we find solutions to solve the problem, because it oftentimes is hard to identify because again we have so much people doing so much good for their dogs, and then the birth rate is become out of control, and special thanks to Bark, and all of the institutions and private and government that are doing their best to spay and neuter dogs to lower the breeding population. However, that's not going to be enough. We have to have education, and we have to change our attitudes and behaviors towards closing in our yards. But I want to paint a picture. A picture that came to me a few years back. The garbage truck. I think we had a situation in the country where the garbage collection wasn't coming to, I think, duplexes. And so for a while, for like 2 weeks or so, might have been a little more, we just didn't have any garbage collection. And I imagine that if someone drove past, looking through the corner, they would say, man, these people are nasty. And in reality, it was more of a institutional or systematic reason as to why the garbage was overflowing and why, making us look bad, per se, you could say. And so I draw that analogy to look at the stray dog situation. And right now we have an excess of stray dogs on the street, and it's really hard to identify whose dog is who at this point. And so now we have a more of a systemic issue that's going to require, I think, first cleanup and a way to rehome dogs and find perhaps sanctuaries and repurpose dogs for other purposes, like perhaps therapy dogs or and persons and persons out there doing a great work rehoming dogs, fostering dogs, and finding homes for the Royal Bahamian Pot Cake around the world. So I congratulate and I applaud everyone But you know what I'm speaking about is a community-wide understanding of how to approach the problem from a statistical standpoint, meaning, okay, what does it cost to manage the stray dog population on the street and get the population levels lowered, even if we didn't do spay and neuter, you know, for example. And so, you know, those are the conversations I think we could have more of, and we could figure this problem out, you know.
I think you've shared a lot of food for thought. Now, I you had also said that we need to bring about greater awareness. Given our population's unique makeup and how we receive information, how would you actually approach that? Making people more aware of the issue and how they can improve it.
Well, that's a great question, and I think the way that we approach the health issue with health with the Ministry of Health and Wellness was revolution. I don't know, revolutionary. Many countries probably have done that same taken the same approach, but for us it was revolutionary. And I applauded, and in my within myself, I applauded the government for taking an approach to the health and wellness of the Bahamian people on a ministry governmental level. And so I think the any issue such as this that really it touches on agriculture, you know, because you know dogs fall under the portfolio, and so it touches on food sustainability and health. You know, there's the risk of disease and cross contamination. So many areas are affected, but we may not, just not be aware of it. So it might call for larger, I guess, programs, public and private. To tackle the issue, and that would now cause the information to get fed into the schools and into the curriculums and into the forums and the town hall meetings. And I think that to me that's one way. And then also and then that would lead to on getting a financial understanding of what it's going to take to solve the problem. And then money can go to the agencies that on the ground. That are dealing with it on the ground level, tackling, you know, when people get attacked from dogs and they have to go into the community and capture dogs, et cetera. You know, that's where the money needs to be going at the end of the day. So we have to figure out how do we get it there and increase the awareness so that we as a community ask for that to happen.
Money makes the world go around, and that's one of the, you know that saying, put your money where your mouth is. What could we do to help? And policy and practice, legislation, all of these things would be helpful. Getting the information into our classroom and imparting the information to all of our members of society in ways that they can appreciate it would be, I think, a very fine start, or that those efforts that are already happening, let's improve on those. But before we move on, I just wanted to talk a bit more. Could you give us perhaps Dr. Sorry, Professor Hogg, an example of what good have you seen done for our dogs in society? Because I know Mr. Stubbs has lots to say about this, but I want to bring you back in to help us beyond Frappe, because I think Frappe needs to be a celebrity at this point. What have you seen? Other examples of maybe other dog owners really treating their dogs well and giving back?
Well, I've seen people, well, how they take their dogs in the cars, how they take them to the beach, how they look after them, and they are concerned so that our pot cakes aren't treated as if, you know, the only food we should give them is pot cake, where their name comes from, you know, the rice pot cake. But I've seen people more concerned about looking after their animals, and one way that is really good and important is getting them spayed and neutered, because our dogs shouldn't be just breeding factories. In fact, they shouldn't be breeding factories at all. They should be spayed and neutered so that they can live a healthy life that actually improves their health. And they also shouldn't be wandering the streets, so that with them wandering the streets, they have a home. So technically, they're not stray, but they're wandering the streets, right? Keep them at home where they're going to be safer, also where they're less likely to cause a problem for others. Many people don't realize that you can actually be fined for having your dog out there. And a part of the reason they don't know is that the laws are not currently being enforced the way they could be, but I'm hoping that that will change so that people are, first of all, educated about responsible pet ownership and looking after your pets, but also making sure that the community is a safe community in terms of how we let our pets go or keep them in the yard.
Oh,
But I
definitely.
see some improvement. I've been to some spay and neuter programs and I've seen people bring their pets, so they are concerned about taking care of that.
Excellent tips. Thank you for sharing your observation. And you mentioned, obviously, responsible pet ownership is important. I think before you can adopt a pet, at the Bahamas Humane Society, there's a list that you have to satisfy, and you have to promise to be a good pet owner. I wonder, how could we see more of that encouraged? And I know that Mr. Stubbs had shared with us that there are lots of good people treating their pets very, very well. And we should applaud them for doing so. Especially in light of many stories we were hearing of persons not treating their animals very well, maybe dogs, cats, horses, whatever it may be. So it's great to know that you both, in your expertise, have seen the positivity. Now, again, it's been so much fun. We have 10 more minutes. I want to talk about something that y'all have coming up. It's a few months away, but I want us to let the people know that this is coming up. Mark your calendars. But also keep in mind, we're always talking about the Royal Bahamian Pot Cake. And we always have these dog shows with the high pedigrees and those things that, we think that our little pot cakes may not be able to go in. But I believe you're having what's called the Pot Cake Awards. Please tell us a little bit more about that, Mr. Stubbs.
All right, well, the Pot Cake Awards will be coming up March 22nd, 2025. Be at Stapledon School. It's going to be fun, an event for the entire family. And you have persons out there that are serious dog trainers, so we're going to have the serious obedience competitions, beginner and advanced. We're also going to have fun competitions like waggiest tail and best trick and prettiest dog, well-dressed, veterans class for the older dogs, most improved rescue dog. So, but stay tuned. So we'll be making more announcements as the months go along. So look forward to seeing you out there, March 22nd, Stapledon School from 10 to 3, the Pot Cake Awards in honor of our Pot Cake, but the Pot Cake will be awarding the other breeds.
Has there ever been a pot cake award? Because I feel like, it's more so for, I mean, when we think about a dog awards, it's usually for like pedigree dogs. This is the first time that there would be a pot cake award.
Well, actually, no. Interestingly enough, in 1990, I think it was two, the bicentennial or quincentennial, one of them, they had the first ever Pot Cake Awards, which
Oh.
I actually won with my Pot Cake whiskey. And and it was more of the show side of it, not the obedience. So it's very the judging, the way the dog moves with the handler and the aesthetics of the dog in terms of how it meets the breed specifications, and that sort of thing. And so yeah, so it's and that's exactly what you'll be having at the Pot Cake Awards. You'll be having a pot cake class. But you're in the home of the pot cake. So if there's anybody that should be awarding the other breeds, it would be in honor of the pot cake. So it's the Pot Cake Awards.
The Royal Bahamian
The
Pot
Royal Bahamian Pot Cake.
Cake.
Exactly.
No, I'm sure that the public is going to support. We're a few months out, but we want you to mark your calendars now. We're going to make sure hear back from our friends closer to the date so that we can keep this on everybody's minds. It'll be around the same time we're going to showcase the Bahamas Humane Society and BARC. with the good work that they're doing in the area of animal protection. Now again, time keeps flying. We have about 5 more minutes. Maybe I can get some closing words, some tips. What would you tell the Bahamian public, Mr. Stubbs and Professor Hogg, about dogs, how to treat dogs, the importance of taking care of your animal, of being a good person, and how pet ownership is actually one of the ways that, we can give back to others, but give back to ourselves the joy and happiness that is life.
Well, one thing I can say is that your dog loves you and unconditionally, and your dog also helps your health. Being with your dog is a way to calm down and get away from the stress of regular life. And more, we need to be able to do that. Also, for children, learning how to be a responsible pet owner actually teaches them a world of things. It teaches them empathy. It teaches them a bit about biology. It teaches them about respect. It teaches them about learning to be responsible. So it's a learning experience, but it's also bonding. If you have a puppy for your child, the puppy and the child, they're going to grow up together. They're going to depend on each other. That is a bond that's going to be virtually impossible to break. And it is beneficial for the animal and the human. It is beneficial for the family. We help each other out, dogs and people. We were made to be together.
A mash made in heaven. Mr. Stubbs?
Dogs are from I've been a child, the dogs have brought for me a sense of fulfillment and having and being able to just share a bond with my dogs, learning skills and tricks and made me feel like I was special, to be honest. And so dogs bring that to our life. You come home and I mean they are happy to see you. And for going out there and having a hard day's work, just trying to make a dollar, just sometimes having just your dog as a friend to come home to is something a lot of people have. And so for that reason alone, we should do our best, to provide the best care we can. And that means, taking part in community events that such as spay and neuter programs and supporting them. And then also taking care of our own dogs in our homes, making sure our yards are closed in. As simple as that may sound, it's serious. And then if you close the yard in, then you won't have to chain them, and so that would alleviate that problem. And if you can't afford a dog, then just don't get it. So many people get dogs and then realize halfway down the line before the dog is 1 year old that they can't afford it. And so just plan it out just because if you were going to have a child. I think I saw one study that probably said a dog could be like $12,000 a year, just in care. And that's a lot of money. And if you don't plan for that, then that may run up on you. So that's what I would advise. Plan for the dogs that you want to have so that you can make sure you can afford it. But all in all, I see so much good happening, and I do want to end on a high note.
Of course.
So I encourage you to keep doing what you're doing, and if you need training and you need help, reach out. Ms. Hogg and I'll be happy to assist.
And how can people reach you?
I'm at stubbsdale@gmail.com. Or 818-9731, or you could even visit stubbsdale.com with 1B.
Nice. And Professor Hogg, if people are wanting to meet frappe, would they also go through Stubbsdale?
Yes, definitely.
Excellent, excellent. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's been a pleasure for me to host Mr. Devlin Stubbs, Professor Bridget Hogg, talking to us about the importance of dogs and how to treat our dogs. And how pet therapy can be so beneficial to us. You know, as humans, we tend to forget all of the things that make life so wonderful, and part of that is our animals. And so we're happy to have hosted them. We're looking forward to having them back. I'm happy that you stayed tuned for an entire hour listening to us on this very interesting subject. And we hope to have you back next Saturday at noon here on Guardian Radio 96.9. This is Deandra Cartwright, and I'm happy that you joined us. Enjoy your weekend and may it be wonderful.